Welcome to The Clever Cookster, your window into the kitchens of the world's best cooks. I'm your host, Kara Rhoda. Our guests today are Karen Page and Andrew Dornenberg, the masterminds behind the book Kitchen Creativity, Unlocking Culinary Genius with Wisdom, Inspiration, and Ideas from the World's Most Creative Chefs. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having
Thank
us.
You.
Happy to be here.
Before we get started, a quick word from our podcast sponsor. Whether you're looking for flavor adventure or simply better tasting meals, fill your pantry with Spice Islands. From Saigon cinnamon and dillweed to bay leaves, garlic powder, cumin, and turmeric, Spice Islands maintains a strict standard for each item to ensure consistency, quality, and flavor. And they use a craft approach to capture the volatile oil of each spice, which gives it its flavor. Visit spiceislands.com/clever for more spice facts and delicious recipes. And pick up Spice Island spices in the premium spice section of your local retailers. You've spent a lot of your careers unpacking what makes chefs tick, both the sort of finely honed senses and also the extrasensory skills that make them able to create alchemy in the kitchen. So what are you doing in this new book? And talk about sort of the research and the exploration that led you to what is a pretty incredible tome.
Oh, thank you so much for saying so. Well, I think this book, we actually look to do the same thing that we look to do with all of our books, which is to answer all those burning questions that we've still got left that we didn't answer through the previous book. So with Kitchen Creativity, it really was about wanting to get to the heart of what we think are some of the most creative professionals in the world today. I think if you'd studied creative professionals, you know, 50 years ago, you might study painters or musicians or other artists. And today, if you look at who the most creative professionals in the world today are, I think that you couldn't help but include chefs on your list. That chefs are not only culinary artists, they're entrepreneurs, they're activists using food to solve social problems. So I think the creativity that they use in a whole host of different realms is fascinating. And we really wanted to understand the same way that we've set out to understand, you know, what makes chefs tick, you know, in terms of looking at food as artistry or looking at other aspects of what they do. With this book, it was really understanding their creative practices, really the nuts and bolts, the kinds of things that anybody who is interested in creativity could apply to their own lives, whether they're interested in making something new for dinner in their own kitchen tonight or solving a social problem like Jose Andres, hopping on a plane, going to Puerto Rico and figuring out how do we serve 2 million meals when the Red Cross hasn't even been able to do that yet.
I think a lot about how so many restaurant chefs seem, as you say, really amazing at solving these logistical problems, whether they're able to apply those skills to social issues or just pulling off an event that nobody else could pull off. It's sort of this ability to think through how a situation will play out. You go deep into so many stellar restaurant kitchens in the book, and you also tell great stories throughout about the history of certain dishes. What were some of the best stories that you came across throughout your research and that really stuck with you?
So many of them.
Actually, two of them come to mind right away. For me, it was finding out that there actually was a guy named Nacho who invented nachos. And the story goes is that some military wives came into the restaurant. Nacho Ignacio, Ignacio, as he was known, goes back to find the chef. Chef can't be found. He invents nachos. They love them. Next thing you know, we have nachos. And they actually have like a nacho celebration, fiesta. And the other one I loved was the Cobb salad. Bob Cobb went into his refrigerator at the end of the night, started putting things together, and the next thing you know, this iconic dish of America lunchtime, the Cobb salad, is invented by someone going in and using leftovers. And I think that's the alchemy. It's like a little of this, a little of that. Next thing you know, he has a hit. And I think that was really fun about the history of food.
And there's so many instances, I'm sure, that they did not turn into classic dishes. And I
yes.
think some of those stories are best left forgotten. But if you look at even, you know, the buffalo chicken wings, it was when a restaurateur mother was trying to feed her son and his hungry friends after they saw a movie on a Friday night. All they had left was some leftover chicken, some barbecue sauce, I think
Celery.
Some blue cheese dressing. I mean, you can sort of imagine this happening. And yet, you know, it was only years later in retrospect that we're like, well, how did these dishes come about? Other times it was just accidents or quirks of fate where, you know, a burrito gets knocked into a deep fat fryer by accident, as the story goes, and lo and behold, chimichangas. So I think the beauty of those stories is the fact that even a mistake isn't necessarily a mistake, and that it's something that might just be your next great classic dish that's something worth celebrating, as they found out at Craftsman and Wolves in San Francisco, where the owner had asked an intern to hard-boil an egg to insert inside a muffin. It turns out they were soft-boiled instead. Instead of getting angry, he realized, wow, stuff oozes out. This is what people love. Bingo. The rebel within was born, and an Instagram sensation was launched.
Before we continue with our podcast, a quick word from our sponsor. When you're cooking meals for the family this holiday season, be sure to opt for premium spices from Spice Islands. By sun-drying many of their spices and de-stemming their chili peppers by hand, Spice Islands uses a craft approach to deliver the most authentic and intense flavors possible. They maintain strict standards for each item to ensure consistency, quality, and flavor, and they take extra steps to ensure the richness of their flavors, like cryogenically freezing their cumin to preserve its oils or milling their garlic to a true powder so it doesn't add any grittiness to your dishes. So whether you're looking for flavor adventure or simply better tasting meals, fill your pantry with Spice Islands and taste the difference in every bottle. Visit spiceislands.com/clever for more spice facts and delicious recipes, including one for spiced maple carrots, a quick simple side to complement any meal. That's spiceislands.com/clever and pick up Spice Island spices in the premium spice section of your local retailers.
I feel like sometimes there's this sort of divide between the sciencey geek cooks who are, you know, really interested in figuring out the best way to do something and why, and the sort of intuitive cooks who are more interested in sort of trusting that gut curiosity and seeing where it takes them. And I'm curious about what kind of cooks you are at home, and also how your work kind of bridges the gap between the two, because I think that it does.
Mm. Oh, that's a really good question. I think Andrew used to be more experimental and used to throw things about in a more, one would say, creative fashion. But what we found was that those experiments in the very early days of his professional cooking career weren't always successful. And yet it was those mistakes. I think in the infamous example, it was cilantro and goat cheese and polenta that he'd thrown together that we found out was a disgusting combination, led me to ask the question anyway, well, how are you supposed to know what a good combination would be? Which, lo and behold, led to culinary artistry, which led to the Flavor Bible, and led to our body of work about flavor compatibility, realizing that some flavors don't work together and wondering, you know, how can you discover when they do work? And we had asked chefs very early on in our books, Becoming a Chef and Culinary Artistry, how do you know? And a lot of chefs, like I remember Jean-Louis Pelletin at the Watergate Hotel in Washington, D.C., the late great, was telling us, you know, sometimes the best chefs can just taste those ingredients, those flavors together in their mind. And I thought, well, I can't do that. What about, are there other people like me that can't do that? I guess there were a lot of them out there. And so I think the types of cooks that we've become, I think maybe are a little more tempered by the fact that we have resources like the Flavor Bible available to us. So sometimes we'll just pick it up, flip through whatever ingredient we have at home, whether it's mushrooms or sweet potatoes, and just think, we kind of use it as a menu at home. And we'll say, oh, okay, what direction do I want to take this in? Do I want to take it to Mexico? Do I want to take it to France? And do I want to take it to Japan? And so that'll determine whether I pick up miso as my next ingredient or shallots or something else altogether.
Chilies or something like that. But also, I think that I would define myself as a very intuitive cook. But I'm also at the Green Market all the time. And so I'm always in touch with the season. I was at the Green Market today shopping for, you know, my dressing mixture. But also, I think people are intuitive and they just don't have the language for it. And I thought what was great was Karen interviewed Laura Day about intuition, sort of explaining what intuition is for a cook. And I think a lot of people are probably way more intuitive than they know. And they just didn't have the dialogue to ask themselves these questions and say, oh, I do that. Oh, I do that all the time.
I love that there are real things that people can take away from basically the best chefs in the world and bring into their home kitchens and actually have a little bit of that empowerment. And it really makes you cook differently. It makes you cook more confidently when you feel like you have the tools and the knowledge to then experiment within. So I want to ask you sort of, what are those nitty-gritty takeaways? What are some of the things that you tell home cooks to do based on your work that you think will make them both more intuitive and more knowledgeable about what they're doing when they're experimenting?
Such an amazing question. I'm so glad you asked that because I don't know if you saw the headlines. It was like a couple months ago. All the headlines were saying that there was a major study done that only 1 in 10 Americans actually enjoys cooking. And it sort of broke my heart when I saw that because you realize that we're in this era where everywhere cooking is celebrated. The chefs are part of the celebrity culture. The restaurant going is certainly thriving. And yet, for people not to love cooking at home, I think that we've sort of put cooking in this box where a lot of home cooks, anyway, feel that unless you have the exact ingredient in the exact amounts called for in a recipe, you know, your recipe is going to be an utter failure. You suck as a human being. I mean, you know, on and on and on. Every terrible thing you could ever imagine. And what we're hoping with Kitchen Creativity is that it can really help to encourage people to have fun with cooking again. We're aiming it at that 9 out of 10 people who think that cooking isn't fun, that they don't love cooking, because I think cooking is something that in this day and age when we are so tech-driven and we're all addicted to our iPhones and our digital devices, you know, our sensuality is often expressed through what we choose to eat, how we choose to engage with ingredients, and we're losing some of that. So I think if we can really get more involved in both immersing ourselves in the sensory life of food and flavor and food and wine or beer or cocktails, as you so choose, or mocktails for that matter, that you can have so much more pleasure. And I think that it's just a matter of thinking about things. So, for example, in Kitchen Creativity, we've got a section on how to create a new dish, and it can start with an ingredient, it can start with a technique, it can start with a bottle of wine or a cocktail or anything else, and that you can just use that as a launching point for a lot of your creative inspirations. We also challenge the reader in the beginning of stage 3, which is a section on creativity, to think about what your favorite dishes were when you were a kid. And Andrew and I both did that. And we both found it incredibly eye-opening. I can't believe we hadn't done that before. But just to show people that embedded in your favorite dishes, for me it was caramel apples, so that combination of caramel and apple and peanuts is a classic combination that I have since applied not only to classic desserts, but also to making a cocktail, combining the apple cider with rimmed caramel around the edges and chopped peanuts rolled into that, or use it as a salad, you know, substitute peanuts for the croutons, toss a little bit of caramel in the vinaigrette, and have that with sliced apples. You're still getting the joy of those flavors that, you know, are seared in my memory and my imagination and enjoying them in whole different ways. And I think I would love to encourage people to play with their food, as we've done since the days of culinary artistry, but to really use what inspires them, use what brings them pleasure, and really transfer that into different, what we call flavor platforms, in different ways, and to really not feel that sense of fear that's keeping them all from loving cooking.
It's a caramel apple, for goodness sakes. And I think just if you want to do something, if you want to switch up your cooking tonight more creatively, we teach you how to season like a chef, shop like a chef, and think like a chef. And what you can do is look up our sidebar on salt or vinegar and just get some different salting agents. Don't just have your standard salt you always use. Pick up some tamari, pick up some soy, pick up some Parmesan cheese, some feta, all these different ways you can add salt. If you like to have a salad all the time, pick up some sherry vinegar, pick up a lemon, and pick up some balsamic vinegar. You're going to have 3 different experiences 3 nights in a row. They're all going to be creative. They're all going to come from you. They're all going to educate your palate. And again, it's about you. It's going to be fun. You're going to have a new dish in your house, in your repertoire.
I love it. It's such a great book. And it's a great book, I think, to give people who sort of have all the cookbooks you would give them, but are sort of ready to start doing their own thing. Check it out. Kitchen Creativity, Unlocking Culinary Genius with Wisdom, Inspiration, and Ideas from the World's Most Creative Chefs. It's a great book, and it's a great addition to the wonderful work that you both have done already.
Thank you so much. So kind of you.
Thank you so much for coming to visit. And tune in next time on The Clever Cookster, your window into the kitchens of the world's best cooks.